Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
The question that we're going to deal with this morning is a very important question, and it starts from the following. Everybody knows that when they check in their luggage, if you're smart, you understand that your luggage is lost until proven otherwise, correct?
Yeah.
Because until you get it back, it's lost. So therefore, a smart person who flies makes sure that his handbag has all the essentials in them. And everyone has different definitions of what essentials are. Your toothbrush, your shaver, your tefillin, obviously. For me, amongst many things, it's two more things. A set of wipes, because on the plane when you eat, inevitably in those chairs, you're going to get dirty. So a set of wipes comes in very handy. And salt, because I always think that the food does not have enough salt. So one day I'm on the plane, and for some reason, I forgot to check. My handbag did not have enough salt in there. There was nothing left, and the food was not delicious. So instead of eating the food with an appetite, I started to think, is there any significance to how much salt you put on something in halacha? And that's how this shiur came about. See, when you're upset about something, there's a Jewish way of responding. You give a shiur. And this is how this shiur came about. So let's begin. Is there any significance to salt in Judaism? So if you look in the top of the source sheet, you'll see that salt has three different connotations, I would say, in our life. One is very ancient. When the Torah talks about putting salt on korbanos, in Vayikra, Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, V'chol korban mincha techa b'melach timlach. And all these specific korbanos, you have to put melach on, salt. V'lo tashbit melach b'it alokecha me'al mincha techa. Anybody want to translate that? What's tashbit from the word Shabbat?
Rest,
or to be more precise, retreat. And don't retreat, and don't be stingy, Bruce, on the melach you put on the korbanos. Is that what it says? It says, melach brit elokecha. What does that mean? The covenant salt of God. Akol korbanecha takriv melach, on every korban you put melach. So we see that part of the sacrificial work in the temple was salt, explains Rashi. Shahabrit kutala melach misheshet yemei bereishis. Salt is an ancient thing all the way back to the creation of the world. Shuhuftachu hamayim atachtonim liyikarev b'mizbeach b'melach v'nisuach hamayim b'chag. As you know, not only do you put salt on their korbanos, but even on Sukkot, when they used to pour water on the mizbeach as opposed to only wine, water is also full of salt. Also has salt in it. So salt has been there from the time of the creation of the world, from the time that God decided to divide on the first day of creation between what and what? Vayavdel Elokim, ben ha'orl, ben ha'choshech, and also between
the water.
I may be off a day, actually. The water. So the water was there, and God just separated it between the top and the bottom, what we call the top and the bottom, even though the world is round. So first and foremost, we could see that salt is part of the sacrificial work in the Beis HaMikdash, because it's always been around. Number two, salt happens to have a connotation of the Torah of something eternal, something that will always stay. It's very hard to get rid of. The pasuk says, "Kol trumat kodashim, asherim b'nei Yisrael Hashem, atat lecha ulvanecha v'livnotecha itcha lechok olam, brit melech olam hu lifnei Hashem lecha ulzaracha itach." I've given you, the Kohanim, the Trumat HaKodeshim, all the various gifts that you get, the Matnot Kehuna, the 24 gifts that Kohanim get. Coin? Only your coin? Only one coin in the room? So all the gifts we're going to have to give Bruce one day. We are ultimately, the Torah says, in a certain parsha that I'll give you a guess to find out which parsha it is, the pasuk says that it's a chok olam brit melech olam hu lifnei Hashem lechal uzaracha itach. This is an internal covenant of salt. Once again, picks up Rashi. Karat brit im Aharon. God made a covenant or a contract with Aharon, the grand kohen, bidvar abari umitkayem umavri et acherim, with something healthy that can make others healthy. Brit melech kebrit akuta lamelech she'ino masriach leolam. It is such a strong covenant or contract that it's like salt that never smells. If you think about it, salt does not have a bad odor to it, or has no odor to it, to be precise. So, as we could see, Just to reiterate, salt is put on all the korbanos because it has a connotation of something that it's always been around. And God is basically saying to the Kohanim, you will always have salt because it will always be around. It doesn't get bad with time. So once again, it's always been there in the past, and it can always be there in the future, because unlike bread, it does not go bad. Number three, there's another connotation to salt in our lives. So we talked about the korbanot, and we talked about the trumot. So you can look at me and say, very nice, it's always been around in the past, it doesn't get bad, and it's always been in the future. But the connotation of the first two psukim I just quoted are what? Things that are relevant today or not relevant today?
Not
so relevant today. We get rid of truma today because a kohen can't eat it bitahara with purity, and we don't unfortunately yet have the sacrifices back. So how is this in any which way relevant to us? Take a wild guess.
Well, it's a remez. We maintain
a remez.
We maintain practices in commemoration of.
Very good.
Of course, I know how to do it.
So Bruce is quoting many Gemaras, and we'll just quote the one on the source sheet, that basically says that without a Beis HaMikdash, don't think for a moment, you just say, okay, listen, I don't have a Lulav and Esrog on the first day of Sukkot, so I missed out. I can be a good Jew. Next year, God willing, I won't be on a stranded island. I have a Lulav and Esrog. Don't think for a moment that Chazal, our sages, were happy with the situation we're in today, in which we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, they went out of their way to say that various things we do is in commemoration of what they used to do in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, looking at the Gemara in number 3, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shlosha Dvarim, three things, Ma'arichin Yamavu Shnotav Shel Adam, makes a person's life longer, and one of the things in the list is HaMa'arich Al Shulchano, one that has a long, nice, delicious meal that takes a while. He doesn't eat in 2 minutes, he eats. So the Gemara says, Da'alma da'ati anyeye ve'ahavilei, Tichtiv ha-mizbech etz amol shalosh gavoha, ve'idaber zeh ha-shulchan asher lifnei Hashem, patach be'mizbech ve'siyem b'shulchan. It says in Yecheskel something about a mizbech, and it ends with a table. Now we all know that in the Beis HaMikdash there were two vessels. One of them was called a mizbech, altar, and the other one was called a shulchan, a table. What did they put on the mizbech?
The one inside or outside?
The one outside, let's say.
Sacrifices.
Sacrifices. And what was the one inside, the golden one?
The showbread.
No.
Mizbech.
No, it was the incense.
The incense. And then we can go on to say, as Mordechai said, there was also a shulchan, another vessel, in which we put on the showbread, the lechem upon him. So how come he's mixing them up here? Rav Yochanan Amar Leizer Amar Tavayu calls bunch of Beit HaMikdash Kaya Mizbech Mechaper Yisrael Ve'achshav Shulchanol Shel Adam Mechaper Alav. So when there was a Mizbeach and used to bring korbanos, that gave you atonement. Today there's no Mizbeach, there's no sacrifices, and there's nowhere to bring the sacrifices to. So what gives you atonement? Shulchanol Shel Adam means?
Shulchanol.
It's
like an altar.
Actually, the shulchan is like an altar.
Yeah.
And therefore, don't just eat in order to live, but rather eating should be a religious experience that you uplift. And therefore, we come to our sugya of today. If we've already established that on every sacrifice there is salt, and part and parcel of all the gifts you give the kohanim that work in the Beis HaMikdash where there were sacrifices, is the fact that it's like salt. So, putting these things together, simple mathematics, if dining room table equals altar, and on altar there was salt, what should we have on our dining room table?
Salt!
Is there such a halacha that you have to have salt on the dining room table? Question number 2 will be, not just do you have to have salt there, meaning that it commemorates, or it's another way of saying the Kohanim will always get these gifts because it's like salt, it doesn't go bad. But number 2, what did we do with the salt in the Beis HaMikdash? We didn't leave it there. We didn't bow down to it, God forbid. We didn't drink it, but what would we do with it? It was put on the korban. So do you have to spread salt on your food when you're sitting at your dining room table? Everyone with me? Since our dining room tables today are instead of the altar, do you need salt or you need to use the salt? Those are the two questions. Yes, Bruce.
So two questions. One is, should we always have it at the dining room table as opposed to just on Shabbat?
And number two, they have like Dead Sea salt now, rather than just a regular. Would that be a better salt to use because it's actually Yamamelech salt?
As to the second question, the quality of salts, I'm not an expert. You'll have to ask a chemist.
Well, the Gemara says Sodom salt is dangerous. Right.
The Gemara does say Melech Stomit.
So maybe stay away from it.
Perhaps, we're not sure if the Melech Stomit is just like the Yamamelech salt, but it could be. As to the first question, we will get to it in a few minutes. So let's begin. Is today, since our dining room tables are like the Mizbeach, that we need to have salt? Look on the number A on the source sheets. The Shulchan Aruch in Simon Kuf Samech Zayin, 100 and... Anyone? Samech. No, Nun, Samech Ayin. 167. Subdivision Hey, which is?
Five.
That's a way of keeping the class awake. When you get to numbers, everyone corrects you. So you say the wrong number, sometimes they get you. I think this morning people didn't drink coffee. If I would have said the wrong number, you'd believe me, which is no good.
In a state of depression. With
the Gemara says that if the rabbi says right in his heart, you say it anyway.
This salt may have a health component. I just want to quickly say that this shiur should be complete with Flora for Fagelbad Bela.
Fagelbat Meila should have a kapit refuah shalema. Bezrat Hashem itbarach.
And she does salt on the table all the time.
Absolutely. Shulchan Aruch says, Lo yivtza, a person should not eat, obviously, bread, ad she yaviu lefanav melach o liftan, says Rashi, kol davar ne'echal imapat, lapet po prusata ptzia. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you should not make a motzi until you have either salt or something else to put on the bread.
Something else?
What's liftan in the Gemara's language, which is now in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law? Liftan are things that you used to put onto bread. From our perspective, jam, things like that. So says the Shulchan Aruch, you should not make a motzi until you have something you're going to have the bread with. In other words, you shouldn't make a motzi on the bread and then bring over your cream cheese. You should have it on the table, make a motzi with it. We're going to leave out the liftan for a moment and look at the salt. According to the Shulchan Aruch, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to make a motzi and do what with the salt?
Put it
on the bread. Not enough to have it on the table, as we said, just to remember who, there was Kohanim, and there was a Brit Melach done with them, a covenant of salt. You have to use it.
On the bread or on the tray next to the bread that you dip the bread in, or right
on
the bread?
Oh, who knows? That's already semantics. Who knows?
This is
Jewish custom 101. Do you need to dip the bread? Do you need to sprinkle the bread? Same Shiloh with the honey. Do you need to have the squirt pot or not? Do you need to have the honey dish?
So it doesn't matter.
Big shilas that gdole people that are bored out of their minds probably deal with, and ultimately they probably come to some conclusion.
That may be wrong.
This is all we have to
know. The halacha here is simple. You have to use the salt. It's not enough to remember the salt. You have to use it. Now, just to make it very clear.
Question. That's the type of thing they deal with.
Yeah. Going on, the Ramah has a different connotation. It's not like a korban where you put the bread on, but the Ramah, who has glosses, of course, on the Shulchan Aruch, says in the middle column, in any case, when the Ramah says in any case, he obviously is referring to what? I'll give you a little hint. Anytime you read the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah says umikol makom against the Shulchan Aruch, he's basically saying some people don't do this. So it's, even though some people don't do this, mitzvah lahaniach ala shulchan melach kodem sheyiftza, you should at least have salt on the table before you make hamotzi, ki ha-shulchan domer lamizbech, va'achila ke-korban, v'ne'emar kol korbanecha takriv melach, says the Ramah, you should have it on the table because your table's like an altar, and therefore, just like on an altar, there was always on every sacrifice there was salt. You should at least have the salt on the table. That's what the Ramah says. How is the Ramah different from the Shulchan Aruch? Simply, the Ramah says it has to be on the table. And the Shulchan Aruch says use it. Perhaps the Shulchan Aruch basically came to this and said, due respect, this has nothing to do with Mizbeach, sacrifices, temple. Take that all out of your mind. What does it have to do with?
Taste.
How do I know I'm right? Because the Shulchan Aruch did not limit it to salt. But what else did he say?
Other condiments.
But the Ramah puts it into the category of spirituality. Namely, it's like the sacrifices. So just like the dining room table is like the altar, you have to have salt. You don't have to use it. It's not to make the food delicious. You have to have it on the table. My Rebbe and mentor, Rav Lichtenstein, would not sit down at a table unless there was salt there. Would not begin to eat unless they bring salt to the table. I don't know if he used it. Based on the Ramah, obviously.
So if the salt is there to make the food tasty, why make this an halachic issue?
Exactly. We'll get to it in a moment. What happens if the food is tasty without the salt? Or they put enough salt already. We'll get to it. Shulchan Aruch says the salt is there to make the food tasty. If you have hummus or tchina, some other thing, it'd probably be fine as well. Ramah says no. You don't have to use the salt, but it better be on the table. And there's a third reason the Ramah says, "Umikom akom mitzvah laniach al kol shulchan melach kodem sheivtza, for who may gain mina poranuyot." What does that mean? Who may gain ala poran mina poranuyot? It guards you from what's poranut? Terrible things. Says the Mishnah Berurah. It's based on a medrash, and the medrash says as follows. Listen to this beautiful medrash. This medrash needs a commercial break for all those that are listening and never went through this. People that come to a religious home on a Friday night and they wash their hands, they can't believe how a family can have a full discussion between washing their hands and a motzi without uttering a word. You know how the discussion goes, right? So says the Mishnah Berurah. There's a medrash. Yisrael Yoshvinu Memtinim Zel Tzachit Lidehem. Friday night, everyone's going to wash their hands. You got 25 guests. Everyone's just sitting there, doing nothing. They can't daven because your hands are supposed to touch the bread first. They're not going to hold a sitter or a gemara in their hands. They're just sitting there. So if they're just sitting there, hem below mitzvot. They're not doing a mitzvah. They're not doing anything. They're not doing averus, but they're not doing mitzvahs. What happens in Shemayim? Hasatan mekadrig aleihem. The Satan starts saying, you see, the Jewish people are a bunch of lazy bums. Look at them, they're just sitting around. Not only are they not talking, they're doing nothing. And what goes ahead and defends us and saves us from the Satan's kidruk, from the Satan, the Satan's big mouth?
The salt.
Brit melech megen aleihem. Tosfos, by the way, quotes this in Daf Mem Amud Alef. In Maseches Brachos, and he says exactly the same thing. Rabbi Menachem haya medaktik meod l'avimelech al ha-shulchan k'deita b'medrash. So, according to the Mishnah, according to this third interpretation, you don't need salt because it makes the bread delicious. And you don't need salt because it's like the Mizbeach. Why do you need salt? To defend you. So going back to the beginning of this year, we saw that salt is a brit melech olam. It is a covenant with God forever, so it guards the Jewish people. On the other hand, we also saw salt being used on the sacrifices, and we see that all this is reflected in the three different reasons for salt. A, it makes the bread delicious. B, it's like a sacrifice, so at least have it on the table. And C, have it on the table not because it's like a sacrifice or it makes the bread delicious, but rather why?
Again.
To defend the Jewish people when they sit there, they shut their mouths, and they're waiting for hamotzi. Three different interpretations brought in Shulchan Aruch as to why there should be salt on the table. You understand the ramification.
Holding by one.
It could be any of the above. But still, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah do disagree. Or at least the Ramah contemplates a situation where you don't use the salt. Because he has a different understanding. So let's go into the first ramification. You all said it. Dr. Savir, you want to start saying it? What's the first ramification? Very simple.
Did it taste good?
Let's say the bread tastes good without salt. Delicious, Baruch Hashem, we're in Israel. The breads here are delicious. They're wonderful.
They're high blood pressure.
Nutritious. They're wonderful. Yeah. They're good. Bread in Israel is delicious. Do you need to have salt? Says the Shulchan Aruch, according to his understanding, that you use the salt. The lapet bo'atapa, to make the bread delicious. Or you can use tchina chumus. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Exactly in that same sif. The iminikiyah. If the bread is clean, Or it already has spices on it. Today, as you know, you can go to the store and buy bread with za'atar and other such things.
Or salt.
Or salted like ours. So the Shulchan Aruch living in Sfat, I guess they already had salted bread way back. He likes to eat it without salt. You don't have to wait for the salt to be brought. Because what's the salt there for, according to the Shulchan Aruch?
Sounds like taste.
Taste, if you get it. It's tasty without it. Finished.
Isn't a symbol of a wooden potato? It's a symbol.
Oh, that's not the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch said it's only for taste.
That seems too mundane.
Shulchan Aruch says taste. So therefore, based on his point of view, if you have bread that is delicious without salt, you don't need salt. So therefore, anyone that wants to go with the point of view that salt is only there to make the bread delicious, if it's delicious without it, or already has salt on it, or salt will ruin the taste, forget about the salt. Salt is out.
We don't need halakha for that.
You know, it's eat with salt. But I, for instance, the doctor told me years ago, I should limit my salt.
Sure.
So, limit. I can eat everything without salt. It tastes very good on the contrary.
Very good.
So, in other words, what I want to bring out is, it's the nature of the human being. He was used to it. He's used to salt. It's salt. But if he doesn't start with salt at all, he can live without salt at a period.
Right. By the way, you're covered on both sides.
My life experience.
On both sides. According to the Shulchan Aruch, you say it's delicious without salt, or you don't want salt because of health reasons, no problem. According to the Ramah that says you only have to bring salt to the table, you can bring a salt shaker to the table, just don't use it.
But when I need the halacha to tell me that, you know, it says, I mean, you know what, the hot dogs are better than mustard and hamburgers with ketchup and pickle. I mean, I need the halacha to tell me that, you know, if it's tastier, use salt.
But that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch is there for. It's a code of Jewish law to the Jewish people. Maybe you would think, in your mind, salt has a spiritual something or another, because you read it in the Torah twice. Came along the Shulchan Aruch and says, no, I paskin halacha, salt is just there for making the bread delicious. And if it's delicious without it, don't think there's some sort of a spiritual, mystical reason to bring it.
Well, what if it said nothing about salt?
Then you wouldn't know.
So I wouldn't.
But that's exactly the point. The Shulchan Aruch assumes that you lay in every Shabbos, and you're going to lay in this Shabbos, and it happens to be the pasuk on this source sheet about Brit Melach Olam Hu. So you see that Melach is written twice in the Chumash, and it's a big deal. And therefore, you would say, oh, it's a mystical thing, and I saw people making kamotzi, and there's the salt shaker like this, or there's a salt that you sprinkle on, maybe there's an issue, but the doctor just told me to limit my salt, what do I do? Shulchan Aruch says, don't make yourself nuts! It's only that to make the bread delicious. If the bread is delicious without it, go, move on. Finished.
A matzah, there's no salt.
Now we're going to come to matzah. Comes along the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Pesach, where it says, according to the Shulchan Aruch, lo letabel mamatzah b'melach. Night of the Seder, you should not dip salt or not sprinkle salt on your matzah. Says the Mishnah Berurah. Why did it have to tell us that? What's Alamar? Even though for the rest of Pesach, on Chol HaMoed, through Shvi Shel Pesach, you do put salt on the matzah. Now listen to these words. Even though it's clean and delicious without the salt, that's debatable, but that's what he says. Meaning our matzah, says the Mishnah Berurah, is delicious without salt. And therefore, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you would not need it at all. But according to the Ramah, you would need salt on the table. Why? Or even sprinkle it on. Because it's like a sacrifice. On the two Seder nights in Chutz La'aretz, ein nogim kein, tetzfehu nirah lechem oni kshenotavu b'melach. He says, it should have been, that even though the matzah is delicious without salt, you would have put salt on it. Because it's like a sacrifice. We have a technical reason. Why not? What's the technical reason? You need lechem oni. You need bread of a poor man. And a poor man does not have salt.
So a poor man needs bread and salt and bread.
So that's exactly his point. To make it even more of a poor man's salt, a poor man's bread, you don't have salt. But so he's saying, even though we, meaning the Mishnah Berurah, we put salt on our matzah, which is like our challah, during the rest of Pesach, happens to be me on the Seder nights, not because the bread is delicious without it. It's delicious on the third day of Pesach too, but because it's like a sacrifice.
So you have the just same to thing finish on Rosh Hashanah with honey.
The honey is a good nafgamina. We'll get to it in a moment, but before I just to finish it, if the whole idea of salt is to make the bread delicious, once it's delicious without it, end of discussion. Right? Finish. The Ramad does say in Hilchos Pesach, "Ena minhag l'tabel b'melach b'layla rishon, the pat naki no tzarich melach." The matzah is clean, you don't need melach. That's one point of view in the Ramah. Second point of view, it is like a sacrifice, so therefore for the rest of Pesach, yet, the first night of Pesach, no, because you need lechem only. But there was a third point of view. Why do we need melach? Not because to make the bread delicious, not because it's like a sacrifice. What was the third point of view?
To keep the satan away.
To keep the satan away. Don't we need that on the night of Pesach too?
No, it's Leil Shmirah.
Maybe it's Leil Shimurim. On the other hand, you could say, the satan's still working full time. Don't know. Now, you just brought an interesting nafkamina, which is an excellent nafkamina. If you put honey on your challah, like is the minhag on Rosh Hashanah onwards, some until Hoshana Rabbah, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that's what makes the bread delicious. End of story. Have a good night. According to the Ramah, perhaps you would have to put salt on the table, not use it, but it has to be on the table. And according to the third point of view of the Ramah, that it defends you from the poranut, honey doesn't have that, only melach. Therefore, you would need it on the table. So again, the Shulchan Aruch of Joseph Caro's table, if he used honey on Rosh Hashanah, did not have salt on the table. It was in the kitchen. The Ramah did, either because it's like a sacrifice, or the satan. Turn the page, let's go to another nafkamina, which is probably going to blow your minds.
On the sacrifices.
Yes.
And it was required to put the salt on the sacrifices. Right. Why wasn't there a bracha to put the salt on it? If we're saying that here it was required for the sacrifice.
Very good question. Very good question. It's a very long topic in halacha as to why certain mitzvos don't have a bracha. For example, you said Kriyat Shema this morning. There's a mitzvah to say Kriyat Shema. You didn't say Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvot v'tzivanu likro Kriyat Shema. And there's other mitzvos that we do that we don't have a bracha. I'm just going to give you a simple answer, even though it's a fascinating shir unto itself. The simple answer would be that since melach was part and parcel of bringing korbanos, it was probably included in that mitzvah. It wasn't a mitzvah in and of itself, but rather it was included in the other mitzvah. In order to prove that point, you'd have to go to the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam or any other the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Mitzvot, like the Sefer HaChinuch, and see if he counts it as a separate mitzvah, or if it's not independent, but part of another mitzvah. When something is part of another mitzvah, we usually don't have a separate bracha on it.
It's not ma'akim.
Pardon?
If you don't have salt, I mean, you couldn't bring the korban until you can get salt. I mean,
if there was no salt, could you not bring the korban? I have to look that up. I don't know if it was ma'akim. I'll have to look that up. Fortunately, we don't have sacrifices, so it's not so as relevant.
Unfortunately.
I'm saying fortunately, they don't have to look it up today because you're not about to bring a sacrifice as of yet. But Berech Be'ezrat Hashem, that should change in 2 minutes and we'll make it very fortunate. So that's a simple answer, but that's a very fascinating question as to why is it certain mitzvahs have no brachos. The second ramification after the third, the two ramifications we heard, number one, if the bread is delicious without it. And number two, if there's honey, do you still need to bring salt to the table? Is a ramification that I would never think of on my own. And I saw this, and I'll quote it from where I saw it, but in order to quote it, you have to have the background to it. So there's three Gemaras we have to learn together very quickly to know. Number one, yes?
Aren't there korbanot where you can specifically cannot put honey?
You're not allowed to put honey in any of the korbanos.
Well, exactly.
No.
Doesn't this give you a conflict?
No.
Wait, if we're saying that we put honey on the challah on Rosh Hashanah, and it's like the shulchan or like the mizbeach, then
you can't put honey on the mizbeach when you sacrifice the korban. But after you sacrifice, let's say a korban shlomim.
Yeah.
And you go home and you not go home. You eat it in where you're supposed to eat it in Yerushalayim. Can you dip it in honey?
That was the question.
Probably yes. Okay. You can dip it in ketchup too. You can't put it on the Mizbeach. So you can have honey on the table. You can eat the honey with the challah. That's no problem.
But if you put the honey on the challah,
well, yeah.
Is that parallel with putting honey on the
You're trying to say that because bread is instead of a sacrifice and dining room tables and at the altar, is it like that? Is it like that?
If A is B and B is C, is A C.
Right. So indeed, I would say that the table has basically two components to it. It's like an altar, but it's also the table that we eat on.
Okay.
So in Yerushalayim, in the ancient Yerushalayim, there were two places. There was the altar where you barbecued, quote-unquote, the korban, or you threw the dam of the korban, and then there was another place where you cooked it. So today it's like in the same place where we eat it, and we also put it, and therefore you have both of those things happening.
Having honey didn't mean you didn't have salt, does it?
Pardon?
Don't you still have salt on the table?
That's exactly the nafgamina we just said. If you have honey on your bread, according to the Shulchan Aruch, the bread is delicious, you don't need any
salt.
But according to the two other interpretations of the Ramah, either because it's instead of sacrifices, or you have to have it on the table.
Right.
You have to use it, you have to have it. So, now we get to the third nafkamina. This nafkamina is going to blow your minds. So Jews, Friday night, Shabbos morning, Shalosh Shudas, they usually put salt on their challah. As to why they don't do it during the week, probably because they like the Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch says you never need salt if it's delicious without it. I don't know why Friday night, dafka, it's not delicious without it. According to the Ramah, you never need to put salt on your challah at all. You just have to have it on the table. So why do you put a dafka Friday night? I don't know. Probably because Friday night is such a spiritual night that people are more aware of this particular halacha. Now, if that's being the case, and it's such a spiritual thing, again, the Shulchan Aruch says just delicious. If it's not delicious, then forget it. But according to the Ramah, that it has to do with sacrifices, listen to this nafkamina. In order to give this nafkamina, you have to learn three gemaras very quickly. Number one, can you bring korbanos at night?
No.
No. Gemara in Tumurah, Daf Yudal Amud Aleph says, when the Sachem Yikarif Balaylan, the Gemara says absolutely not. The only thing you can bring at night is the leftover parts of the korbanos that you brought during the day.
Gemara.
That's Evarim Uptarin. That's a famous Gemara in Meseches Brachos that says, Tfilat Arvit En Lakeva, Tfilat Erev En Lakeva. Meirev does not have a time. Why? Because sometimes, as we learned in the Peshirim, they would burn it at night. Sometimes they would be able to take care of it during the sunlight hours. It was a slow day in the Beis HaMikdash. But that you can burn at night. So you don't bring Korbanos at night. That's Gemara number one. Gemara number two. How was Korbanos brought in the Beis HaMikdash? There was a certain order. The order was, I call it the sandwich. You would bring the Korban Tamid in the morning, and you'd bring the Korban Tamid in the afternoon, and sandwiched in between them was all the Korbanos that the Jewish people bring. So, excuse me for the picking on people. Let's say you did an Aveira Bishogeg that has Kares. Let's say you put on fire on Shabbos, and you forgot it was Shabbos. You have to bring what kind of a Korban?
Chatat.
Chatat. When did you bring it? You didn't come to the basement in the morning and say, I want to be first! I want to be first, no problem. Get online. First, we have to bring the Korban Tamid of the morning, and then the other Korbanos. Now, another person was saved. He was saved from a terrible accident. He wants to bring a Korban Toda. Shlomo, but yes, it's a Korban Toda. So, a Thanksgiving offering. He comes to the Beis HaMikdash in the afternoon, and he's all dressed up. I want to bring a Korban Toda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving me. Cohen says, tough. What do you mean tough? Still sunlight outside. I know you can't bring korbanos at night. I learned the Gemara in Tumur and Brachos. Why can't I bring the korban now? Because it says in the Psukim that you're supposed to say every day, as we've established, with regard to korbanos, v'yiktir aleha chilvea shelamim. It says that you maktir aleha, you sacrifice on it, meaning on the korban tamid, everything else. Says the Gemara in Meseches Psachim, that all the korbanot had to be sandwiched between the korban tamid of the morning and the afternoon. So if you come in the afternoon and they've already brought the korban tamid of the afternoon, you can't bring korbanos that day anymore. You have to come the next day. Therefore, the Gemara in Pesachim goes into this whole beautiful description about what they did on Erev Pesach, because the korban Pesach was the exception to the rule. It was the only korban that was brought after the korban tamid of Ben Arba'im. And therefore, they would sacrifice it on Erev Pesach a little earlier to get it in before nightfall. And then the Gemara says that when Erev Shabbos was Erev Pesach, they had to sacrifice it extra, extra, extra early. Why? Why did they have to sacrifice it extra, extra, extra early on Erev Pesach that was Shabbos? Erev Shabbos, which was Erev Pesach, excuse me, meaning Friday like it was this year. Because you can't broil the korban at night. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. You can broil on Yontif, but not on Shabbos. Thus came the famous Mincha Gedola. because once in a blue moon there was an Erev Pesach that came out on Erev Shabbos, and they used to bring the Korban Tomit so early, 6.5 hours into the day, that, oh, we have a precedent, we can daven an early mincha. But on a regular day, in order to allow as many Jews to come in, they would bring the Korban pretty late in the afternoon, 9.5 hours into the day. On Erev Pesach, because a lot of Jews have to bring their Korban Pesach, which is brought after the Korban Tomit, they would bring it 8.5 hours into the day, or 8 hours, whatever the Gemara says. So, two things. Number one, you can't bring Korbanos at night. And number two, all the Korbanos are sandwiched in between the Korban Tomits. Number three, the Gemara says, Amar Kra Olat Shabbat B'Shabbatov, V'lo Olat Chol B'Shabbat, V'lo Olat Chol B'Yom Tov. Explains Rashi, Kegon Evere Tamid Shel Erev Yom Tov, Shelo Uktaru Mibo'od Yom, like the Evere Tamid, let's say you bought a Tomid on Erev Yantiv, let's say Yantiv came out on Sunday night, and you bought the Korban Tomid of Sunday, and it wasn't yet burnt by the evening, and Malino Tomid Shechashecha, you can't put it on the Mizbeach at night. V'kol Shekein Kodshim Psulim. So putting these three Gemaras together, we come up to the following conclusion. You can't bring Korbanos at night. That's the bottom line. You can't bring Korbanos at night. You can't even bring the burnt offerings of the Korban that you brought during the day at night. Based on that, what could be the nafkamina to salt?
Can't use it at night.
Dinner versus lunch, gentlemen. I would never think of this on my own. I'd never think of this on my own. According to the Shulchan Aruch, this whole wonderful introduction is irrelevant. Is it delicious or not delicious? If it's delicious, move on. But according to the Ramah that says it's instead of the sacrifice, perhaps you would think of the following nafkamina. This is written in the book by Rav Herschel Schechter, who documents the minhagim of Rav Soloveitchik. Who listened to this? I would never think of this one. Divrei Harav, page Kuf Samich Tet. Anybody still awake?
169.
Excellent! 169. Shamati Meharav Rabbeinu Turk, Sheyichye, Sheshama Miagiveret Gerber, Tichye Achot Rabbeinu, the sister of Rav Soloveitchik, Sheminhag Avia Agramas, the minhag of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was, Hayashalole Tabel Prusat Hamotzi Bamelach Belel Shabbat. He would not dip the challah in salt at night, only during the day. Why?
Because now you can't offer
because there's no sacrifices at night. Now that is a wild nafkamina I never would have thought of in my life. Because we say it's like the Mizbeach. So we say like the Mizbeach, but not exactly. Are we ever so aware of night versus day? But comes along with Moshe Soloveitchik, and basically, he says at night he wouldn't put it day, yes. Why? Because if it's like a sacrifice, and that's the reason, and due respect, just to finish the thought, due respect, at night you need the salt. At night you can't have, you shouldn't have, you don't need the salt because there's no sacrifices at night. In the morning there are sacrifices, so for lunch he had salt. Just to finish the thought, if it's Magen Alecha Mipnei HaParanut, it's as needed at night as it is during the day, because we wash our hands at night as in the day. So interesting nafkamina. Do you have salt at night? According to Shulchan Aruch, makes no difference night, day. Is the bread delicious or not? According to the Ramah, maybe we can start saying, wait, night you know, because there's no sacrifices. Day, yes. But if you need it for Paranayot, night and day is equal. So you have all three options. Either you always need it, maybe only during the day, or maybe never. Yes?
No, it's just that things connect up. And my father, Zecher Tzadik LeRafa, from 1923 to 1930, learned in Warsaw with Moshe Soloveitchik.
Very, very good. And Tachkamoni.
Yes. And before that,
Baruch Hashem, we have someone here to learn with Rav someone here. His father learned with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik in Warsaw before he emigrated to America in 1929. Okay.
Before that, from 20 to 23, he learned with Shimon
Shkab from Grodno. Ah, Rav Shimon Shkab, Secher. These are the Gedolim of Lita, yeah. All these names.
They molded him.
Absolutely. That was beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Ah, beautiful. We have a son here whose father learned with two of the Gedolei of the 20th century that we still learn their shitot, their methods of learning to this very moment.
And I'm sitting next to the person whose father...
Who danced with the Prince of Wales.
And you should seriously think about the way you sit. Yes.
So does this mean on Friday night that some people may not want to wash because you want to minimize...
Of course not. You have to wash Friday night because it's a din of lechem mishnah. You have to eat a double bread Friday night. Or you have to at least make hamotzi on a double bread. You have maybe eat one.
Aren't you making the connection that it's like a korban? And
it's like a korban as well, but it doubles over. Excuse the pun, but there's a double loaf, and it doubles over as a korban. But no, one doesn't override the other. You need bread Friday night, of course.
And if you bring in Shabbat early,
yeah,
the Moshe then would rather actually show the distinction.
That's very interesting.
And an early Shabbat still.
I don't know what Rav Moshe Soloveitchik would say. If you bring in Shabbat early,
then you can use salt.
There's a famous if you bring in Shabbat early and it's still daylight outside. Yeah. So does that lend itself over to saying that, hey, I brought Shabbat early, even though it's daylight outside? For me, it's Friday night. So if it's Friday night, act as if it's night. So you make Kiddush as if it's Friday night, you wash, you sing Zmiros, you can finish the whole meal before it's even Shkia, before it's even sunset, right? Or does it mean, no, you brought in Shabbos early, which means that you are now obligated in the Isurei Malacha of Shabbos, namely the prohibitions of Shabbos. There is a dispensation to say Kiddush. Perhaps, according to the Rambam, not because of Tosefet Shabbos, because you can add on to Shabbos, but for a different reason. And therefore, it's not that you turned Friday into Shabbos. It's still Friday. The nafkaminas, from what I just said, are endless. I can go on now for the next 20 minutes, giving you nafkamina after nafkamina after nafkamina, but we'll just limit ourselves to you. If you say you turn Friday night into Friday afternoon into Shabbos night, no salt on the table, according to this. But if you say, no, all it does is I accept Shabbos early. It doesn't mean it's already Shabbos, per se, meaning it's Friday night. Then if it's still daylight outside, you can go ahead and
use salt.
Just like we say with regard to what? Just one more nafkamina, Sfira. If you accept Shabbos early, you don't count Sfira in Shul usually, even though you're allowed to if needed, if you're going to forget. But you don't, because you don't say, I'm turning Friday into Shabbos. So Friday is the 48th day of Sfira, and Shabbos is the 49th day of Sfira, like it was this past year. You're not going to say, oh, now it's the 49th day. It's not the 49th day yet. It's the 48th day.
We repeat the Shema too.
And we can go on and on with Nafkaminas, but that's a very long discussion. When you make an early Shabbos, you daven Myra after the plug, that you turn that day into the next day, well, you just have a dispensation. You daven Myra early. We can go on with Nafkaminas till tomorrow. Think about the entire Jewish year, and you can think of endless nafkaminas.
Well, just in a very practical case, you come home from shul, you've made Shabbat.
Yeah.
Something occurs in the house that requires action that you would never do really on Shabbat. So is it Shabbat early?
Let me tell you a little trick to override your problem. If you accepted Shabbat early, yeah, and something happened in the house, we do have a gzera of amira la'akum, not asking a non-Jew on Shabbos to do what you're not allowed to do. Does that lend itself to an early Shabbos? A discussion, I can deal with it. But I'll give you a very simple trick. Is there a gzera in the Torah or by Chachamim that you can't ask a Jew to do something you're not allowed to do on Shabbos?
There is.
No, there isn't. It's very simple. Either a Jew is as obligated as you, or he's not obligated. When is the one case that you are obligated and the Jew next to you is not? When you accepted an early Shabbos and your neighbor didn't. So that is mutar lechatchila. You can go to a Jew. There's never been a gzera against it. You can go to a Jew next door who has not accepted Shabbos. No tricks, no hints, no schmints, nothing. Put on my plata. Did you accept Shabbos? No. Put on my plata. That's heter gomor. That's the simplest way to deal with it. And thank God, when we live in our communities, usually you have people that have accepted Shabbos and that have not yet accepted Shabbos, so it's very simple.
We have healing neighbors.
No, that is absolutely not. Again, if you're obligated, they're obligated for the 25 hours of Shabbos. That's going to be the 26th hour of Shabbos that perhaps you obligated yourself, excuse me for saying so, you doomed yourself, but you didn't doom the whole world.
Can he join you?
Another question, yes.
Yeah, going back to the karbanos.
Yes.
What was the minhag with the salt? Was the karbanos dipped into the salt? I don't know.
This is again the big question. I don't know. It says you're supposed to put salt in the karbanos. The psukim do not specify how it was done. We have to learn Maseches Penachos and Zvachim to deal with that.
Well,
yes.
One other question on dipping now.
Yes.
On Pesach at the Seder, we dip our finger
into the wine.
There we dip. Right?
Yeah.
We're not sprinkling. But why there specifically do we dip?
It's a minhag. It's not a halacha to dip your finger in the wine at the Aseret Tamakos, and when you say dam ve'esh v'tibron lashan. The reason I like, again, this is a reason I'm going to suggest, is that we have a saying, ben folay vecha al tismach. When your enemies fall, don't be happy. And indeed, Jewish tradition is that we're not happy on the day our enemies fall, we're happy when we're saved. So therefore, we don't celebrate Purim on the 13th of Adar when we killed our enemies. We celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar when our enemies were no longer being a threat to us. Same thing with the Six-Day War. We don't celebrate the victory of the Six-Day War as a victory in war. We celebrate giving back Yerushalayim, ancient Jerusalem. So the same thing lends itself to the Aseret HaMakot. They were necessary. They were necessary in order for the Jews to leave Egypt. However, we're not for a moment are the Jews happy that people suffered. And therefore, we take out a little bit of our wine of salvation, the wine that we're going to say the words Ga'al Yisrael on at the end of the Seder, you have redeemed Israel, at the end of the Maggid, excuse me, to show that we're not happy about our enemies falling. And this on Pesach is even more germane, because one of the reasons suggested as to why we don't say Halal on the last day of Pesach is that on the Levim Bayam Va'atem Omrim Shira, my creations are falling in the sea and you're saying a song, and that's absolutely 100% wrong, and therefore we're not happy when our enemies fall. We don't go ahead and dance in the streets when non-Jews, God forbid, are killed. Sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes we have no choice. Well, not for a moment are we happy about it, and therefore we take out a little bit of our wine. But again, that's my interpretation as to the minhug of doing that at the Seder.
I think if you continue reading the Gemara on that topic, the angels will say, of course they should be happy when singing, because the enemies are being wiped out. The angels themselves are saying, on that daf, that they should be very happy.
Right.
That the angels are dying, that the enemy is being wiped out, as opposed to what we know.
And what does God answer them?
Well, God tells them, you know.
God says, you're wrong.